This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Inna allatheena amanu wallatheena hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. Inna allatheena amanu wallatheena hajaru wajahadu في سبيل الله أولئك يرجون رحمة الله أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم. يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Hamas reiterates its full commitment to the Gaza ceasefire agreement, saying Israel is blocking the deal by evading to move to its second phase. In a meeting with the Turkish foreign minister, Iran's president says regional crises are rooted in plots hatched by interventionist parties to sow discord in the region. Also in our headlines, Venezuela's president slams Washington's aggression against Caracas, saying the U.S. seeks to seize the country's vast oil reserves through lethal military force. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Israeli forces continue to kill more Palestinian civilians across the Gaza Strip as the regime presses ahead with its blatant violations of the ceasefire deal. Gaza's health ministry reported three more deaths as a result of Israel's attacks on Sunday. According to Palestinian sources, nearly 360 civilians have been killed since the ceasefire entered into force in October. The death toll from the regime's genocide now surpasses 70,100, with more than 170,980 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent, Moti Abu Mosabeh, joined us earlier with more details on the regime's truce violations.
Every single part of Gaza Strip, particularly the eastern outer skirts of Gaza's districts, are still witnessing more cruel attacks of the Israeli occupation forces. Over the past couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces in the eastern side of Khan Yunis City intensified their artillery strikes against Bani Suhaila Aya. As you know, that this Aya is still witnessing daily attacks by the Israeli occupation forces. The Israeli warplanes have launched dozens of their strikes against this Aya per se, coupled with the extensive artillery strikes. In the meantime, more residential buildings were detonated and destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces in the eastern side of Gaza City. Needless to mention that the situation right now in the eastern side of Rafah City is absolutely indescribable, because the Israeli occupation forces for the past couple of weeks have been intensifying their air raids against the eastern sides and neighborhoods of the city, which were absolutely obliterated and destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. The Israeli army claimed that it has succeeded to unalive and kill several Palestinian militants and fighters from the Al-Qassam brigades, including multiple, as you know, military leaders. And one of them was the son of Dr. Ghazi Hamad, the member of the political bureau of Hamas movement.
The Hamas resistance movement has reiterated its full commitment to the Gaza ceasefire agreement, saying Israel continues to block the implementation of the deal. Senior Hamas official Hossam Badran said in a press statement that Israel continues to evade moving to the second phase of the agreement. He added that the international community is obligated to take urgent action to stop the genocide being perpetrated against the Palestinian people. Badran noted that putting a halt to Israel's ongoing attacks against Palestinians is necessary to protect regional stability and prevent further deterioration of the situation. He also rejected any possibility for Hamas fighters in Rafah to lay down their arms. Badran said the movement's fighters in Rafah will not accept surrender or hand over their weapons, no matter how intense the aggression becomes. Investigative journalist Rick Sterling joined us earlier to discuss why Israel continues to obstruct the Gaza ceasefire deal with Hamas despite international criticism.
Well, first and foremost, I think we need to be clear that the Palestinians have the right to resist, and Hamas's refusal to lay down their arms is only right. They recognize that if they were to lay down their arms, it would lead to more bloodshed, not less. Just recall what happened in the early 1980s when the PLO left Beirut, and that was soon followed by the Sabra and Shatila massacres, where thousands of Palestinians were murdered in cold blood. I think it's very clear that the Palestinians have the right to resist under the UN Charter and under Protocol 1 of the Geneva Convention. So the claims that Israel keeps making that that they're fighting terrorism, they're standing truth on their on its head. And it was very good to see recently where the newly elected president of Ireland, Catherine Connolly, has said explicitly that Israel is a terrorist state. And that is the I think that's the reality of the matter. Since the first day of the current ceasefire in Gaza, October 11, Israel has killed at least 345 Palestinians. They have wounded 889. That works out to an average of 7 deaths per day.
Israel presses ahead with its land grab policy across the occupied West Bank. In the latest development, the regime has seized more than 250 acres of Palestinian land in a village south of Tumas. According to Palestinian media, Israeli officials issued new demolition orders targeting homes and farms in the village of Atuf, east of Tamun, in the southern Tumas area. Israeli forces have delivered notices to a number of families in the village, giving them 7 days to leave their facilities. The orders came about 2 weeks after the confiscation of roughly about 247 acres of land owned by residents of Tamun, Tubas, and Kirbat Yarza. That land is reportedly intended for a settlement road planned to run from east of Nablus to a checkpoint in eastern Tubas. Local officials say during past weeks, Israel seized an additional 257 acres of Palestinian-owned land in Tubas and the northern Jordan Valley through 9 separate confiscation orders. Our West Bank correspondent, Nabil Hamed, joined us earlier with the latest updates on the ongoing Israeli raids across the occupied territory.
Today, the Israeli forces have continued their demolition operations that have started yesterday inside Jenin refugee camp. Whatever is left from Jenin refugee camp, another 24 homes of Palestinian homes have received notifications of demolition on the edges of Jenin refugee camp under the pretenses of security measurements. And unfortunately, today, the Israeli forces have completed the demolitions of these 24 homes inside Jenin refugee camp. In Tul Kerem, Mahdi, as you have mentioned, the Israeli forces have started making new infrastructure that is, of course, infrastructure to serve the military purposes inside the city and inside the refugee camps of Tul Kerem and Nur Shams. It's for sure not an infrastructure for the Palestinians or for the Palestinian civilians who were forcibly displaced from their homes, but as infrastructure for those Israeli forces who obviously intend to stay inside these refugee camps, making permanent outposts inside the refugee camp. Until now, there is no further information about whether some of the Palestinians will be allowed to go back into their homes.
Hundreds of protesters have gathered outside the Israeli president's residence to oppose Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's request for a pardon in his ongoing corruption trial. Protesters argued that what Netanyahu is asking for is not a pardon. They said the Israeli prime minister is actually asking that his trial over corruption cases be completely canceled without taking any responsibility and without paying the price. Demonstrators stressed that they will not accept Netanyahu's pardon because he's guilty. Netanyahu, who faces long-standing corruption charges, has submitted a formal request for a pardon to President Isaac Herzog. He's facing 3 corruption cases, including bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Netanyahu is also wanted by the Hague-based International Criminal Court over charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. Iran's president has called for further strengthening of relations and strategic cooperation among Islamic countries, emphasizing that it would prevent foreign powers from meddling in Muslims' affairs. Pezeshkian was speaking in a meeting with Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan in Tehran. He said part of regional crises is the result of plots hatched by some interventionist parties that seek to sow discord in the region. He stressed that such parties seek to impose their wrong policies on the region and obstruct the development and progress of Islamic nations. Pezeshkian expressed hope that Islamic countries would cooperate with one another and avoid making existing issues more complicated. Before meeting with the president, Fidan held talks with several senior Iranian officials, including Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, and top security official Ali Larijani. During his meeting with Araghchi, both counterparts described Israel as the greatest threat to the region's security and stability.
Regarding regional issues, we had a discussion with Hakan Fidan. The two countries have mutual concerns. The issue of Palestine and cooperation between the two countries with the aim of ending the massacre of Palestinians in Gaza was on the agenda of the talks. Repeated violations by Israel in Gaza and Israeli attacks in Lebanon and Syria show that this regime has bigger plans to destabilize the region.
Regarding Israeli aggression in the region, this is a mutual problem for all of us. The ceasefire in Gaza must continue, and attacks in the West Bank must stop. We believe that, with regard to the situation in Syria and the expansion of Israeli aggression in the region, the international community must fulfill the responsibilities that rest upon its shoulders.
Also, Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi emphasized Tehran's role as a reliable energy supplier for Turkey, announcing readiness to expand economic cooperation with Ankara. For his part, the Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan stressed that his country has always stood by Iran and will continue to do so. Fidan called for the removal of unjust sanctions against Iran. The Israeli regime suffered a heavy blow during its 12-day aggression against Iran, but the severity of the damages has been brought to light recently, indicating that the impact was more severe than previously thought. We have more in this episode of Explainer.
The 12-day Israeli aggression against Iran was one of the greatest defeats the Israeli regime suffered in its fabricated history. According to some confessions from American and Israeli sources, this aggression was the result of a 20-year plan to attack Iran, which resulted in the defeat of the Israeli regime. The regime is now at its weakest point when it comes to attacking Iran. The wave of Iranian attacks on Israel has led the regime to resort to severe censorship. In a recent report referring to the Iranian attacks, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz revealed that some of the locations targeted by Iranian missiles were not announced by Tel Aviv, and some researchers have revealed them using satellite images. The newspaper wrote that from the beginning of the war to the end, Iran fired a total of about 530 ballistic missiles in 42 waves, totaling 1,000 with drones. These attacks caused great damage to the Israeli regime. Data from the Israeli Tax Administration indicate that since the beginning of the war with Iran, more than 41,000 damage cases have been registered, of which approximately 33,000 were related to damages to residential homes, 4,100 to vehicles, and more than 4,000 to property and equipment. The Israeli Tax Authority estimated the initial cost of residential damage at $1.3 billion, which is expected to exceed $1.5 billion. During this time, more than 18,000 people were forced to evacuate their homes, and the cost of emergency housing and services for them was estimated at about $500 million. It should be noted that the damage to Israeli regime's buildings, especially security and military buildings, is not included in this report and is not included in this process. Meanwhile, economic analysts estimate the direct and indirect costs of this war for Israel at between $20 to $40 billion, a figure that includes military spending, missile defense, disruption of economic activities, damage from Iranian attacks, and reconstruction costs. According to Hebrew media, Israel's average daily military spending during this period was about $725 million, totaling to $8.7 billion, of which more than $2.5 billion was spent on the Israeli defense system. On the other hand, the economic disruption caused by widespread business closures and the paralysis of the tourism, tech, transportation, and daily service sectors caused losses of $1.5 billion daily, totaling about $18 billion in the 12-day period. The economic toll of the Israeli aggression against Iran and the genocidal war in Gaza may cost Israel an estimated $400 billion in lost economic activity over the next decade. Also, according to the regime's media, Iranian missiles and its attacks caused about $3 billion in direct damage to infrastructure, including the Haifa oil refinery, the Weizmann Institute, and military buildings in Tel Aviv, the reconstruction of which requires a heavy and multifold budget. This all proves how the Israeli regime's dream of defeating was met with a crushing blow from Iran and its missiles.
Russia says its forces have made advances near Pokrovsk in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region, conducting offensive operations on multiple fronts. Russian Ministry of Defense said its strikes targeted Ukrainian military industrial sites, fuel depots, and troop deployment points. Near Pokrovsk, Russian military advanced, repelling 10 Ukrainian breakout attempts. Meanwhile, Ukraine's general staff reported 271 frontline clashes on Sunday, with its air force and artillery hitting six Russian troop concentrations and artillery systems. Russian air defenses own 230 drones. The Ukrainian president has said on social media that Russia used about 1,400 drones, 1,100 guided bombs, and 66 missiles this week. The Venezuelan president has condemned Washington's aggression against Caracas, saying the U.S. plans to seize Venezuela's vast oil reserves through military force. Nicolas Maduro made the remarks in a letter to the Secretary General and member states of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC.
Secretary General, OPEC countries, non-OPEC countries, and OPEC Plus. Venezuela formally denounces before this body that the government of the United States of America intends to take control of Venezuela's vast oil reserves, the largest on the planet, through the use of lethal military force against the territory, the people, and the institutions of the country. This claim not only contradicts the provisions governing peaceful coexistence between nations, but also seriously endangers the stability of Venezuelan oil production and the world's market.
Nicolás Maduro asserted that Venezuela will remain firm in the defense of its natural and energy resources and will not succumb to any type of blackmail or threat. His letter came after U.S. President Donald Trump warned on Saturday that the Venezuelan airspace would be completely shut down. Trump also announced that the U.S. will very soon take action against Venezuela on land, following over 20 military attacks at sea that have killed at least 83 people since September. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News News. Stay tuned, though. Bye.
Ocean of Dua.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith, and all of you who are listening to RIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Ocean of Dua. And this program, we try to discuss the different concepts and meanings and try to interpret the passages of different supplications that have been issued by the Ma'sumin, peace be upon them. We were continuing the discussion on the supplication of Sabah, Dua al-Sabah, and let's listen to one passage of this supplication, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk more about that passage.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. اللهم يا من دلع لسان الصباح بنطق تبلجي وسرح قطع الليل المظلم بغياهب تلجلجي وأتقن صنع الفلك الدوار في مقادير تبرجي وشعشع ضياء الشمس بنور تأججي.
This is RIB English Radio. You just listened to one passage of the supplication of Sabah. The Imam says in this passage, he's praying to Allah, he's supplicating Allah, and he is asking Allah for all of the good things that Allah can bestow upon his servants. He is swearing by different things, different signs of Allah. He is saying, "Oh Allah, you are the one who does this. You are the one who causes the morning to appear to us, for the sun to rise, for the darkness to be covered with light once again. And this process keeps repeating, and it is you who is causing this. It's not happening randomly or by chance. In this passage, the Imam says, وَأَتْقَنَ صُنْعَ الْفَلَكِ الدَّوَّارِ فِي مَقَادِيرِ تَبَرُّجِ. Once again, وَأَتْقَنَ صُنْعَ الْفَلَكِ الدَّوَّارِ فِي مَقَادِيرِ تَبَرُّجِ. And you made firm the structure, okay, here it says, of the turning spheres and the measure of its display. This is not an accurate translation, because felek does not mean sphere necessarily. It means a line of orbit. It means what in English we would say constellation. The rotating constellation, the circulating constellation that is happening every single day and night around the North Star or Polaris, the North Pole Star. You are the one who has made firm these stars, and you are the one who is causing them to circulate in the sky. And all of these, they have fine calculations. في مقادير تبرج. Like, we are seeing the stars for thousands of years. We've seen the same stars go around us without any one of them falling out of orbit. So how is that possible? Who is holding these stars in place? Who has structured these stars other than Allah? So Allah is the one who has made the heavens and the earth, the seven heavens, all of the stars that are like ornaments for the lowest heaven. Allah says in the Quran, Inna zayyanna as-samaa'a ad-dunya bi zinatin al-kawakib. So this verse says that the lowest heaven, which is the sky that we have, it has, it's adorned by the stars. They're like ornaments. The lowest heaven has sama'at. Now here, the translation for the Arabic verse, dunya, ad-dunya here means lowest or lower. It doesn't mean dunya as in this world. Some have mistranslated this verse saying that it's the heaven of the world. No, here ad-dunya means lower, just like akbar means greater. So what is the use of these falak ad-dawwar that Allah has placed in the sky with all of its measure and all of its beauty and display? Tabarruj, they're very beautiful. They light our sky every night, and we can see the same stars every single night without any one of them changing their place. Well, Allah says so that the ships, they know where they're sailing. This is one of the uses of the falak ad-dawwar that have been used for thousands of years by those who navigate the seas. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful. O Allah, O He who extended the morning sung in the speech of its dawning, dispatched the fragments of the dark night into the gloom of its stammering, made firm the structure of the turning spheres in the measure of its display, and beam forth the brightness of the sun through the light of its blazing.
Thank you, Allah,
now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever.
You're listening to RIB English Radio. This is The Ocean of Dua. We just read the passage, وَأَتْقَنَ صُنْعَ الْفَلَكِ الدَّوَّارِ فِي مَقَادِيرِ تَبَرُّجِ. All of these are the signs of Allah. When we see all of these things that have been mentioned in this dua, we see night, the fragments of darkness. When we see or we hear the speech of the morning, the tongue of the morning, what is it? These are all the creation of Allah. They can't have happened out of chance and accident. Allah says, إِنَّ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافِ اللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ لَآيَاتٍ لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ. So all of these things are signs of Allah. For who? الَّذِينَ يَذْكُرُونَ اللَّهَ قِيَامًا وَقُعُودًا وَعَلَى جُنُوبِهِمْ وَيَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ رَبَّنَا مَا خَلَقْتَ هَذَا بَاطِلًا سُبْحَانَكَ فَقِنَا عَذَابًا. They say that, oh Allah, you have not created these things in vain, like we're told, that we had a big bang and everything just came into being by accident, and we were made from monkeys, and we were first a really tiny cell, and gradually over the course of millions or billions of years, all of a sudden we became intelligent human beings, and there was no intelligence involved in our creation. And this is all nonsense. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Ocean of Dua. Until next time, I leave you in the care and mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
On September 22, 1980, when the Islamic Revolution of the Iranian people was not yet 2 years old, Saddam attacked Iran with the green light from the U.S. Former Iraqi dictator had signed a peace agreement with Mohammad Reza Pahlavi 5 years earlier, which had ended his border disputes with Iran. But just a few days before issuing the order to attack, much like the U.S. president who tore up the JCPOA agreement, he appeared openly and confidently on television and declared all his commitments with Iran null and void. Forty-five years later, with the 12-day imposed war, all these memories were revived for Iranians. This time, with America's green light, Benjamin Netanyahu, instead of Saddam, attacked Iran at a moment when indirect negotiations between Tehran and Washington were underway to supposedly resolve Iran's nuclear file peacefully. Now the entire world was waiting to see whether, just as Iranians under the guidance of their leader in the 8-year war with Saddam managed to force the enemy into accepting a ceasefire and defeat, in the second imposed war, the Israeli regime and its supporters would also be compelled to retreat or not. The Israeli regime's assessment was that, given Iran's chronic economic problems and social divisions, after a lightning military strike, spontaneous protest cells would emerge, and what happened in Syria would be repeated in Iran as well. Thus, it was that June 13th marked the beginning of a difficult time for Iranians. According to the planners of this attack, with the assassination of high-ranking generals, the situation in Iran would become so chaotic that hired groups and counter-revolutionaries could seize control of parts of Tehran, such as Mehrabad Airport and its surrounding areas, from the police and security forces. This was deemed to cause the conditions. Through street chaos, special forces would be airlifted into Iran, pushing the structure of Iran's government to the brink of collapse within a matter of days. The name of this operation had already been determined, True Promise 3. With operations True Promise 1 and 2, the IRGC in its first missile response did exactly what the regime had anticipated, using a large number of missiles so that the Israelis would feel assured that Iran's missile response pattern had not changed. The Israeli army assumed that by Iran's numerous launches, the locations of its missile systems would be exposed, and subsequently, under aerial strikes, another portion of the Islamic Republic's missile capability could be destroyed.
But we've not seen the pictures of it and been able to assess the nature of the damage because Israeli sensors have blocked that. But we also know that Iran hit and damaged, and in some cases destroyed, the Israel's version of the Pentagon, Israel's version of the CIA, Israel's version of the FBI, Israel's version of the National Security Agency. Israel has two seaports where containers come into the country and where exports leave the country. Iran shut those down. So there was no more seatime, maritime traffic coming in and out of the port. Iran also destroyed the two oil refineries or interrupted their ability to process and produce fuel. The oil refineries at Haifa and Ashdod, which is also the places where the ports are located. Iran shut down the only international airport in Israel. So nobody was getting in and out of the country unless they went to a military airfield and got out on a military aircraft. But all of the military airfields in Israel were also hit.
It's more of a town, really, just on the outskirts of Tel Aviv, called Rishon Zion. I am surrounded right now. If I look in every direction, there are a crew of about 12 emergency workers just in front of me now, going patrolling houses everywhere around the streets here. There's the detritus of the strikes that happened at 5 a.m. this morning in this neighborhood. And just around the corner from me is the, well, what is now a crater, which used to be homes, where two people died.
But that was not the whole story. Israel's costly and expensive attacks carried out with repeated NATO aircraft refueling in the skies not only wore down equipment, but also imposed numerous financial, security, and logistical constraints on Israel and its allies. For this reason, contrary to the bluffs of the Zionist officials, this war was supposed to end very quickly with a decisive victory. Yet Iran, by changing its defensive tactics, decided that, contrary to the enemy's design, the war should become long and attritional, so that Israel would be punished by accepting defeat and a ceasefire would be dictated to them.
Iran has stood up against it. Iran has the admiration and respect of the entire Arab world. The people in the Arab world that are not respected, that everybody loathes, are the ruling elites, because they are seen as eagerly selling everybody out for money and stability. So this war is going to continue for that reason. The other reason is that you can't leave Iran in place if you're an Israeli, because you've determined that they cannot be subjugated. If they can't be subjugated, if they won't submit to Israeli supremacy, inevitably they're going to come back and threaten Israel.
You get what Israel got, and basically, I don't know, they probably will not recover from this, at least in any time soon, if ever, actually. And you look attentively at some quarters of Tel Aviv or Beersheba, or it's just freaking like World War III there.
Iran's missile responses were so effective and unexpected that they quickly alarmed the West about Israel's imminent defeat.
Mouthies.
Thus, on the fourth and fifth days of the war, the leaders of the G7 gathered to take action in support of Israel. From that moment, it became clear that if the U.S. did not directly enter the field, Israel would be buried under the weight of Iran's missile strikes.
September 2021.
For the White House, a strange situation arose. On the one hand, the fragile state of America's energy market, economy, and security was such that it could not enter into an intense war with Iran. On the other hand, it could not remain indifferent to the heavy blows that were pressuring its most important proxy force in the region. Therefore, in a historic gamble fraught with uncertainties, it decided to attack the nuclear facilities at Natanz, Fordo, and Isfahan. Immediately after this incident, Trump threatened Iran with consequences if it responded in any way, and declared the time for a ceasefire and the end of the war had arrived.
And, you know, I listened to President Trump not too long ago say that Israel is winning. And, of course, this is the mantra in the mainstream media. But the question you have to ask yourself is, what does winning mean? It's a meaningless comment by itself.
If under these circumstances, Iran had accepted a ceasefire, the United States would have succeeded in pulling Israel honorably out of the quagmire of war with Iran. But shortly after the U.S. Army's attack, Iran once again targeted Israeli-occupied territories with intense and devastating strikes. This time, the IRGC both changed its firing pattern and unleashed a large, energetic barrage upon Israel. releasing images of widespread destruction in occupied territories evoked the Israeli army's assaults on Gaza. But the IRGC's missile campaign was not yet over. On the evening of June 23rd, the armed forces of the Islamic Republic carried out a precise attack named Bisharat al-Fath, glad tidings of victory against the Al Udeid base in Qatar, using the same number of projectiles that the U.S. had employed in its strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. Although the Islamic Republic did not use its new generation missiles in this attack, the Americans, despite conducting the largest Patriot air defense operation in history, still failed to intercept all of the projectiles. In the end, 6 out of the 14 missiles launched hit their targets. The Al Udeid base in Qatar is considered the most valuable strategic asset of the U.S. military in the region and serves as the headquarters of CENTCOM's Air Command. Alongside the operations True Promise 3 and Glad Tidings of Victory, the network of espionage and sabotage agents inside Iran, which had cost years of investment in training, equipping, and organizing, was being destroyed through vigilance of the people and the efforts of the Basij, security, and law enforcement forces. At the same time, the extraordinary cohesion of Iranians elevated the social capital of Iran to its highest point, and under the guidance of the commander-in-chief, public demands for punishing the aggressor grew stronger. Simultaneously, the measures of state officials to manage affairs and coordinate with the armed forces constantly conveyed to the world the message that Iran, united and in one voice, is ready for a long and powerful defense of its country. It was at this point that the regime had to find a solution for this dire situation. The intensity of the attacks and repeated crossing of red lines, such as targeting places like Evin Prison and medical centers on the 11th day, was for this reason.
Well, the thing you want to remember is that the Israelis depend very heavily on the idea or the notion that they have military superiority over everybody in the region, that they are invincible. And if they start a war and they lose that war, they don't win that war, and indeed it looks like Iran wins the war, this is a significant defeat for Israeli deterrence. It's just something that's almost unthinkable. They started this war thinking that they were going to win a relatively easy victory. And they were going to do to Iran what has been done to Syria. But that's not going to happen. The Iranians are going to stay in this fight. You want to remember that Iran fought against Iraq for 8 years, from 1980 to 1988.
Man, those days we were on Iraq's side, right?
That's correct. So the Iranians, I think, will stay in the fight. And I don't think Israel can maintain this fight over the long term.
Now, the enemies of the Iranian nation were grasping for breath, especially under the weight of global condemnations, which, with the fatwas of great religious authorities such as Grand Ayatollah Sistani, further tightened the pressure on the U.S. and Zionist regime. If Iran's attacks on occupied territories had continued, if Iranian missiles had targeted other U.S. military bases in the region, if the oil and economic interests of the West had been damaged, if resistance groups in the region, who throughout these 12 days had kept their fingers on the trigger, such as Yemen, had entered the field, and if the energy economy and trade in the Persian Gulf had been disrupted, then what achievement would remain for the supporters of aggression against Iran? It was precisely for this reason that Washington, in a state of panic through intermediaries, proposed an immediate ceasefire to Iran. On June 23, 2025,
The second imposed military war against the Islamic Republic of Iran came to an end after 12 days. Although from the very first hours of accepting the ceasefire proposed by the West, the war of narratives began, aiming to portray Israel and the U.S. as victors, awaken consciences, and above all, the people of the region and the Iranian nation knew who the true winner of Iran's struggle against the entire world of domination was.
It has taken Israel's high command just 12 days to see that total victory they claim to have achieved in the first hours of their blitz on Iran turn something that looks much more like a strategic defeat. This 12-day war ended with none of Israel's three war aims being met. Trump's claim that Iran's nuclear enrichment program had been completely and fully obliterated has within a day been flatly contradicted by the intelligence arm of the Pentagon, who sent in the B-2 bombers.
The reason you had a 12-day war was first and foremost because the Israelis were running out of missiles, running out of the means to defend themselves.
Yeah.
Israel was being crushed in one barrage after another of very accurate and devastating missile fire from...
Iran hasn't been defeated. In fact, Iran has punched back very hard against Israel, and Iran still has the ability to intimidate the United States.
Beyond. But no, Israel is not a regional military hegemon and cannot dictate the future shape of the Middle East. The price it has had to pay is high. It has swapped Hamas's homegrown rockets for Iran's ballistic missiles. It has swapped an indirect enemy who uses proxies for a direct one, which has now no hesitation in keeping the entire population of Israel in its bunkers. Netanyahu's lifelong dream of slaying the Iranian dragon may have proved to be a bridge too far.
At the end of these 12 days, Israel not only failed to achieve its initial declared objectives of causing the collapse of Iran's governance, but the military power of Iran, which was supposed to be destroyed, turned into its bane. The U.S. success in destroying Iran's nuclear facilities was also met with serious doubt from experts due to the ambiguous and meaningful silence of the Iranian officials. Thus, the disgraceful and historic memory of the White House's cooperation with the aggression of the Israeli regime was this time etched into history with their failure to achieve their declared goals. Now, the Israeli regime, with its long list of war crimes, such as attacks on ambulances, rescue teams, and medical centers, assaults on scientific and research institutions, assassinations of scientists, intimidation of civilians, and attacks on media centers such as the IRIB and the Central Building of Islamic Radio and Television Union, awaits the consequences of what it has committed. And the U.S., with its lost prestige due to insults and offenses against diplomatic values, stands dishonored with its shattered grandeur at the hands of the Iranians. Meanwhile, along with the sense of pride and the rising spirit of sacrifice among the people, it is the flag of honor and dignity of the Islamic Republic of Iran that has been raised high through the readiness of its sons for struggle across the world, even though in this celebration of victory, we miss many great and small heroes of the homeland.
That's why I won't cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt about this time.